I'm Jay Thomas Smith along with Val Wilson. And this segment of the program, we have the honor of having the Honorable Congressman Al Green of the 9th District of Texas. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and good morning to the listening audience. I'm looking forward to the program.
Our phone number is 713-390-5102, 713-390-5102. We encourage you to call and get your questions answered of the Congressman, or perhaps you've got some thoughts about what's happening in the country right now with regard to minimum wages and unemployment compensation. That's our theme this morning. You know, more than a million Americans lost their unemployment benefits late last month when a temporary federal program expired. And Congress is debating whether to restore the aid for three more months. A bill to do so cleared a procedural hurdle in the House on Tuesday, but final passage remains really murky. Democrats say extending the aid would boost hiring and economic growth, but many Republicans say the benefits discourage the unemployed from seeking work and would widen the federal budget gap. That's the scenario. Congressman, who does this bill affect? Who will be the beneficiaries or those who will be hurt by it not passing?
Thank you for that question. I think it's an important question. I'd also like to add a little bit more to it. I'd like to add first that the people who are receiving this benefit are hardworking Americans. Mm-hmm. These are not people who are slackers. These are people who are receiving on average about $300.
Not a lot.
$300.
$300, boy, you never have to work again.
And it's 1.3 million of them. And it might add also that you have about 72,000 who are estimated to lose their unemployment insurance every week. Mm. That's a lot of people.
It is.
This activity of funding the uninsured, those who are not employed, is something that helps the entire economy. It doesn't help the people who get the money, because they spend money in their neighborhoods, and they keep people employed, and these people spend money. So it has a multiplier impact throughout the community, and that is about, for every dollar spent, you get about 1.55 impact, $1.55 impact on the economy. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing to do. Now, to your question of who does this impact, in the state of Texas, we had 64,294 persons who would lose their benefits, so it will obviously give them an opportunity to come back online. Right here in Harris County, 11,294 persons. In Fort Bend County, 1,352 persons. The unemployment rate, as you know, has fallen to 6.7, but because it's fallen, it doesn't mean that everybody is benefiting by virtue of having a job. Mm-hmm. There are many things to talk about in terms of why it's falling, and I'll be glad to talk about these things. But the important thing to note is that we have people who are our neighbors. People don't always announce that they are receiving unemployment insurance, mm-hmm. but they are our neighbors. And these are people that we know. They have children. They have families that need this help. And I'm hoping that the Senate will get its act together and that we'll get a bill that will be sent to the House. I'm not sure what will happen in the House. I'm not sure anybody in the House knows what will happen, because we have a lot of persons who are highly unpredictable who will have a voice. But my hope is that we can pass something to get this behind us and keep people from falling through a safety net mm-hmm. that we have had since 1935.
Wow.
This is something that FDR instituted when he signed the Social Security Act of 1935. Mm-hmm. Included in that was unemployment insurance as well as welfare. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there have been people who have been fighting it ever since it was signed in 1935.
Yeah, now, the extended benefits, the current extensions that were in place, they began in 2008, was it?
The current benefits started... The extension started after President Obama got in office. He took office in 2009, I believe. Maybe it was under Bush. I'm not exactly sure of that date, to be very candid with you. It was either 2008 or 2009. President Obama came in 2009. He ran in 2008. So I think it may have been under Bush. And under Bush, they've been extended multiple times.
So what's included in that that bill or that extension, the one that just ended, the one we just lost?
Well, we didn't lose a bill in the sense that we didn't get a chance to vote on a bill. When we passed the bill for the budget, This was not included in there. So there wasn't an opportunity to vote for it in the budget. But now the Democrats did have what was called a motion to recommit. And in that motion, we tried to put the money in to continue an extension. So we're trying now to have an extension for 3 months. And if we can get the 3-month extension, hopefully that will give us time to look at other options for people. Training is an important option. And the president has been pushing training. The Congressional Black Caucus has been pushing training. But the problem is we can't get the other side to come on board with training unless we're willing to cut some other safety net program. We're in a position where we've got to hurt someone to help someone. And that's a very difficult position to be in.
Now, what about first of all, how long, what's the maximum period of time that one was able to collect unemployment
Well, generally speaking, you get 26 weeks of it. And that 26 weeks is something that you'll receive by way of the state. The federal government collects monies, but the states actually implement the program. So you would get 26 weeks of it, and those 26 weeks can be extended. And when they are extended, I believe it's about 46 additional weeks that you can add on to the 26 weeks. And we've extended it several times. So it's not as though people haven't gotten some help. I don't think they've gotten enough help. But in extending it, we don't do anything other than help the economy, because it helps to stimulate the economy whenever we extend it because of the money that goes in. And it's a multiplier. So it's a good stimulus for the economy.
And they're going to be spending it for sure.
They don't have a choice. This is not something that you can take to the bank. It's not something you're going to save money with.
Now, what about the critics who argue that these benefits, in effect, pay people not to work?
Well, I always marvel at people who say this, because, quite frankly, people who have families who have acclimated to a much higher income, this meager $300, is just not enough money for them to opt out of working. Even if they wanted to, it wouldn't be enough for them to sustain themselves. This is right at minimum wage. And most of the people who are receiving these funds, they really have acclimated to a much higher standard of living, and they're trying to hold on and not allow their standard of living to drop to the extent that they can't take care of their family. So I'm just amazed that people would say that. But aside from that, to get this benefit, you have to demonstrate that you're working. It will not go to a person who is not working, or seeking work, excuse me. You have to seek work. You have to prove that you're out looking for a job to get the benefit. And when you you get the benefit, you still have to continue to show that you're out looking for a job. You must also be a person who did not quit your job. It has your termination had to be involuntary, in the sense that the economy caused it, something happened to cause you to be laid off. If you a person who just decides, well, I don't want to work, you don't get the benefit.
Now, what happens once the people lose their unemployment? Then what happens to them? I mean, that seems...
Well, here's what happens. They can still get Medicaid, so they'll get some benefit from health care that we have in place. But they simply do not have the safety net that they have paid for, is what happens. And they paid for it because the money is taken out of from them when the employer has to report that money to the federal government. Well, employers don't get money from any source other than the labor of the workers. So while the employer sends the money and is required to do so, it's really the labor of the worker that generates the money. And they will just find themselves dependent upon family members, various organizations in the community, food lines, shelters, homeless shelters. We find our country slipping into a greater state of despair, and people having a greater sense of my country, in the sense, is not helping me in a time when I need it, when I have paid money into the system. And most of these people have paid money into the system for such a time as this.
And if you're listening and you've lost your unemployment benefits, I'd like to hear from you just to see how this change has affected you. Our phone number is 713-390-5102. The state of Texas just recently enacted a law among the hundreds that took effect this month, which indicates that if one is applying for unemployment benefits, he or she must submit to an alcohol or drug assessment. And if the assessment suggests that they have a propensity to be abusing drugs, or they have to take a test, a drug test, before they can apply for unemployment. Are you aware of that that law?
Well, let me, not specifically, not having read that, but Florida has attempted to do a similar thing, and other states have as well. Testing for drugs is something that has become a sort of a acid test, if you will, for poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Here is my retort. I would ask, for the farmers who are receiving these subsidies, should they be drug tested before they can get these subsidies? For the people who buy into farm land just so that they can get a subsidy by not planting, should they be drug tested? Should the people who benefit from having Medicaid and Medicare paid for by the state when they pay their workers poverty wages? Many corporations pay their workers poverty wages.
Of course.
And as a result, you and I, taxpayers, have to pick up the cost of health care for them.
Mm-hmm.
Should those corporations, the board of directors and the people who manage them, because they are benefiting from the government program, should they have to be tested? Now, probably the answer that we'll hear is no, they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I contend that if you're not going to be consistent with that kind of policy, you shouldn't implement that type of policy at all. And aside from that, there's something here that's sinister. You're implying that because people are poor, they're likely to be on drugs. There's no correlation between poverty and drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I have many friends who are quite wealthy who have problems with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I have many friends who are quite wealthy who've had other problems. And you cannot conclude that there is some relationship, some direct relationship between your wealth and your inclination
Absolutely.
To drink
That's
or
right.
to use drugs.
Well, we'll see how that law takes effect. I'm curious about what they're going to do if someone does have a problem. Are they going to pay for the treatment? Are they going to pay for the testing? I wasn't able to find that in the bill.
And you won't, because treatment on demand is something that members of the Democratic Party have been asking for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
If a person knows that he or she has a problem and shows up at a hospital and says, I need help, it's our belief that you ought to be able to get some sort of help, as opposed to eventually ending up perhaps incarcerated for some offense.
Which is crazy.
When the prisons are unfortunately a warehouse for people who have had problems related to addiction. We should find a way to let people get the help that they need. And my suspicion is that you won't find anything in that bill that is going to relate to treatment on demand.
All right. Let's go to the telephone with, let's go to line two with Gail. You're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Gail.
Good morning. I was just calling to make a comment about the unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
This year, my husband, he lost his job after 10 years, and, you know, he's been putting money into the work system for over 30 years, and, you know, they just cut off the unemployment, and so now we just only have one income. So, you know, it really does affect not just that person but the whole family. So now, you know, we have to move out of our house. We have to sell a lot of stuff just to make ends meet. So hopefully they'll do something about that, because I can see when you're saying, like, it's just people that's just lazy that don't want to work, but people that actually out there looking and want to work, especially a man that's responsible for taking care of his family, is very hard, you know, on them. Plus, it's also hard, you know, on the family.
I thank you for calling, Gail. I know that sometimes it's difficult to make this kind of phone call, but these examples are very helpful for us when we engage in conversations with other members to help them understand that these are real people that we're talking about, not just the statistics. And I don't want you to ever feel as though you're a statistic. And I promise you, we're going to work really hard for you. We're going to do all that we can to get those benefits restored. This does not make sense at a time when unemployment is still high. The number may have fallen, but the actual number of people unemployed is still very high. And my hope is that we'll be able to get some help for you.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's go on to line three with Mr. Little. You're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
Yes, hi. How are you doing, Congressman Al Green?
Good morning. It's my honor to talk to you.
Please turn your radio down.
And
please.
In terms of how I'm doing, I am better than I deserve. Thank you for asking.
To God be the glory.
Thank you.
I have a question. There's no way of getting around it, but I used to work for a certain company. Got in a bit of trouble. Went and was given a charge of a felony. In the process of me giving it in the charge of a felony, what happened, long story short, what happened was I found another job and successfully worked there for 4 years on probation. Well, due to unfortunate circumstances, they then called and they then did a background check, and I was terminated after 4 years of being off of probation. So my question is, when I filed for unemployment, even though I made that mistake in America, second chance America, the greatest country in the world, I was denied benefits because of a mistake that I did make. Is that justifiable?
I think that everybody deserves a second chance. And I'm sure that there are some people who will differ with me, but I believe that every human being can be redeemed. And it sounds to me like you've made an aggressive effort to straighten your life up and to move along and become a productive citizen. So I would support helping people to get additional help if that's the case. Unfortunately, you know, this is a time wherein a lot of people are looking for work, and it's very difficult to say to a person, if you'll just call me, I can get you a job. I probably have at least 100 or so people who have asked me to try to help them get a job, and I don't think that that's what you're saying to me. You're asking me whether what was done was justified. I do not agree with what happened based upon what you've explained to me.
And based on what you explained, I would just have one question. Did they terminate you because you did not indicate it on your application, or was it that they just delayed the background check?
Well, the thing was, when I started working at this other company, I had not yet went to court, and I wasn't charged or convicted or anything of the matter. You know, I just went on. They fired me, and I went on and got a job at another company. A year later, they tried to charge me, and the charges they put me on probation. And so to answer that question, no, I didn't have to tell them at the time of being hired, because at that particular time I wasn't charged with anything.
Okay. And all right. And was it a private company or a government agency?
I was contracting, say the name or don't say the name.
No, you don't have to say the name. I just want to know whether it's a government or private entity.
It was a government entity, but in the same token, I was contracted through somebody to work there.
I understand. So basically you would have to go back to their policies to ascertain exactly what the issue was. I understand where you're coming from. I've heard that thought many times before. But sometimes we have to also take a look at it from their perspective. I wish you well. I hope you find the work that you're looking for, because it's a lonely, lonely endeavor out there.
Well, I tell you what, and I'm going to let you go. I'm a man of faith, and God provides all my needs according to his riches and glory. So I'm worried about nothing. God has actually provided me to go on and do bigger and better things, So it was just a stepping stone. But I know we can do all things through Christ. So.
Permit me to ask you one question before you exit.
Yes.
What type of work were you doing, if you feel comfortable asking? I try not to ask personal questions when persons call in.
I don't mind. I was working with delivering packages. We'll just say that.
Okay. All right. I ask because there is another area that you have to concern yourself with. Sometimes persons are convicted of offenses that relate to children or I understand. I'm pleased to hear you say it was packages. I try not to get into the personal aspect of these things, I would tell you that generally speaking, my position is we cannot throw people away. You can't have a society wherein you have throwaways in the numbers that we have in this society. At some point, that becomes a problem for you in the social order when you don't have people get jobs, when they can't vote. These are two important things for people to be able to make decisions about their lives and their circumstances by voting, and then to have a job so that they can take care of their families. So I'm Absolutely. A real believer in second chances.
Okay, well, God bless y'all. Y'all have a blessed day today.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Pam and Vernell, and we'll take your call, too, at 713-390-5102. We're at Magic 102.1, streaming at myhoustonmagic.com. Radio 1 for Houston. Our phone number is 713-390-5102. Let's go to line 1 to talk with Reginald. You're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. You have a question or comment about unemployment compensation?
Yes, sir. We're talking about war. You know, I just want to speak on old Johnson's war.
No, no, no. We're not talking about that. We're talking about unemployment right now.
Well, I mean, that's dealing with unemployment because it's war and poverty.
Well, can you do it in 10 seconds?
Okay. Well, I just want to know on the war and poverty, what's their position? Because Dr. King spoke about not passing a war bill so that we can have money to fight poverty and so that we can deal, like, with payday lenders and create our own institutions so that we can deal with unemployment by creating jobs. So if we stop passing war bills, Defense Authorization Acts, we could have money to be able to put into what we need. And what is his vote on the Defense Authorization Act on those war bills so that we can fight the war on poverty by not fighting wars?
Well, thanks, Reginald. That was clear as mud.
Thank you, Reginald. I appreciate your call. I have two comments. The first is I think you do have to have defense. It doesn't mean that you believe in war, but you do have to have yourself prepared, and defense is a part of that preparation. Now, with reference to the war on poverty, it was just this month that we acknowledged the 50 years of fighting the war on poverty that was initiated by President Johnson about 50 years ago when he declared a war on poverty. And it's no coincidence, by the way, that he said this about within 6 months after Dr. King made his I Have a Dream speech mm-hmm. on the Mall in Washington. Dr. King and those marchers made it possible for that legislation to get through Congress that dealt with poverty and some other issues as well. And I want to mention this. Dr. King and the marchers had a list of 10 demands. Number 8 on that list of 10 demands was to raise the minimum wage to $2 an hour. And $2 an hour by today's standards, adjusting for inflation, would be $13.39. Wow. And we can talk more about minimum wage in a bit. But I just wanted to let him know that we in Congress are still fighting to wage this war on poverty. And one of the things that we are talking about doing and trying very hard to do is to raise the minimum wage, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Okay, let's go to line 4. Pam, you're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. The comment I wanted to make were, I'm unemployed right now. I normally work in a plant, what's called a shutdown turnaround contract.
Yes, ma'am.
Petrochemical?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Chemical and gas. They advise us to draw unemployment when we are made out. And I went back to work recently in 2013, and in 2 months, I think I grossed about 15.
Thousand?
Yes, sir.
That's pretty good.
And they advise us when we are laid off, too. The companies tell us to go pull off unemployment until they call us back to work. I absolutely have no income right now, and it's very hard, so... Praise to God, y'all get it fast.
Thank you, and I promise you, as I promise the other caller, and thank you for your call, that we're going to work really hard to do all that we can to get it passed for you. And for those who may be tuning in late, there are 1.3 million people that have been impacted, and that is growing. 2 million of those are children, by the way. 1.9 million are expected to lose their unemployment coverage in the first 6 months. And you've got about 400 million that's coming out of our economy as a result. You've got 200,000 jobs that could be lost if the unemployment insurance is not extended. And, of course, finally, I just want to mention this, 2.5 million. And in that number, you've got 600,000 children who were kept above poverty. 2.5 million above poverty. But in that number 600,000 children kept out of poverty with this process.
What states have been hit the hardest with regard to unemployment?
Well, you have to conclude that some of the southern states, the southern states have not been big on raising the minimum wage without the federal government requiring that it be done.
Right.
And we're starting to segue into the minimum wage portion of this. So let me just give you a little bit of information about that if you'd like, or we can wait.
Well, we can go ahead, but okay. What is the current minimum wage?
$7.25 an hour.
The federal?
Yes, federal minimum wage. And there are 10 states that have indexed their minimum wages. Mm-hmm. So I was going to suggest to you that those states, people have a higher minimum wage, and as a result, they do a little bit better. But those states are not southern states.
Okay, and what does index mean for those?
Thank you. I'm glad you did ask, because I usually don't say that without explaining that it means that it's tied to something.
Mm-hmm.
It's tied to the consumer price index. So when that moves up, then the minimum wage would move up. And the states that do that adjust usually in January. They will adjust their minimum wage such that it goes up. Now, literally, we have four states that have a minimum wage below the federal.
Really?
The federal guideline. Four states, and those four states are Arkansas, Georgia, Minnesota, and Wyoming. While they do that, they can't enforce it.
Mm.
But it's their way of saying that they don't think the minimum wage ought to be as high as the federal government is setting it.
Yeah.
But the minimum wage is something that we have to protect. This came about with the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. Again, FDR.
Right.
And the minimum wage is something that has been fought against and for ever since it was passed. This is all a part of the Great Depression. After the Great Depression, there was this effort to try to stabilize the economy, not only for that time, but for all time. And minimum wage was one of the means by which this was to be done. The $7.25 an hour is not a living wage.
Mm.
When Dr. King marched, they wanted a living wage. They said they wanted a wage that people could take care of their families with. And they were asking for $2 an hour. Well, we are now asking that the minimum wage be raised to above $10 an hour. Personally, I would like to see it at $15 an hour.
Okay. Yeah, there's an argument. A lot of folks are saying that minimum wages were mainly intended for teenagers and the like, and you know, if you don't want to get minimum wage, get a better job. I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense. But the argument seems to be that the minimum wage is mainly for kids.
Well, nearly half of the people who are receiving minimum wage now are above the age 20.
Sure.
Now, if you, I consider people above age 20 young adults.
Absolutely.
And also, you're finding that in this time of high unemployment, people are not increasing wages. People can't find other jobs. There's not a lot of mobility. So people are stagnated. They're in jobs that are paying minimum wage for longer periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to find a way to create more jobs in the economy. And by the way, we know how to do it. We know how to create the jobs. So we can have an infrastructure bill, and you'll have jobs being created across the length and breadth of the country, not only for the people who work in construction, but also for the architects, the engineers, and the many businesses that will develop as a result of the money that's being spent as you're building a road. But the point that we really have to focus on is this minimum wage is lower now than it has been when you adjust for inflation. For over a decade.
When was this particular minimum wage enacted?
The increase that we have now took place in, I believe it was 07, 06.
Wow.
I wouldn't want to be held to that number because
seven years is a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. Let's mention this, that for people who are, let's call them supervisors, the persons who work at a higher level in the business, their pay, the high-income earners, has gone from $42 to $45, maybe $46 for every dollar the worker makes, to now $534 for every dollar worker makes. And that's between 2002 and 2012.
Wow.
So over that period of time, you've seen high-income earners make a lot more money. And I might add also that one high-income earner made $3 billion. And that $3 billion was $400 a second. It takes a minimum wage worker 198,000 years to make what that person made in 1 year.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of work.
Well, as you can see, we need to make the adjustment.
Absolutely. But I got a couple. Let me just take one more phone call here. Let's go to line two and talk with Bernil. She's been holding a long time. Bernil, you're on Sunday Morning Live with Congressman Al Green. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Very good. You got a quick question for him?
Well, I have a comment. I am on unemployment, and I was working a temporary job paying $15 an hour, and I couldn't afford to get the insurance that they offered. If I paid for the insurance, then I couldn't go to the doctor because I didn't have the money. I'm a one-parent household, and mortgage is due. All my bills are due, but you know, there's not enough money coming in to pay bills and get insurance and everything like that. And I wish you all would find a way. And I did hear when I turned on, did hear you guys say Medicaid would help, but Medicaid only covers ages 18 to 44.
Wow.
In women.
Really?
And there's nothing over that, yes.
That's amazing. If you're 45, you don't qualify?
Right.
Wow. Why does it affect men?
I guess they figure that you're past the childbearing age. I mean, I'm not one to sit at home and wait for a handout.
All right.
I don't have a problem with working, but like I said, I am on unemployment now. They just approved it, but like I said, it's still not enough money to
it is not. It is not. If I may help you and join in with you, it is not enough money, and we have to raise the wage. That's the simple way of putting it. But we also need your help. We need for people to contact representatives and say to them, this is not enough. We hear from people all the time, excuse me, who don't want the raise waged. We need to hear from more people who do want to see it raised. And I thank you for your call.
All righty. As you can hear that music in the background, we got to get out of here. But I just want, if you can just answer this question in sure. as short as possible, you know, from the perspective of the employer, how could employers benefit by a higher minimum wage?
Here's how they benefit. I'm glad you asked, because many people make the contention that there'll be layoffs and it'll wreak havoc on the economy. They never say that when the employer's wages go up exponentially, only when it's the employees. Mm-hmm. But to your question, because employers tend to invest more in people that they know that they'll have for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. So you get better job training, which means that you get a better worker. And when you get a better worker, your productivity goes up. So there's a means by which this not only benefits the employee, but it benefits the employer because he can produce a better product.
Alrighty. Congressman Al Green, 9th District of Texas. If folks like to reach you, how can they do that?
713-383-9234. Repeating, 713-383-9234. And if I'm not there, ask for Kevin. He is my district director.
Alrighty. Thank you so very, very much.